It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Jones. Bowden.
He's got it. England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins.
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket in association with LV Insurance, who of course have been sponsoring both the Test Series and the County Championship all year. And well, look outside. It's wet, it's cold, it's windy, it looks horrible. It looks like the end of the cricket season, and it nearly is the end of the cricket season with the Bob Willis Trophy final just about to conclude. Looks like Warwickshire are going to win that one, which will be appropriate for Bob Willis, sitting above, looking down on his old team. And, well, actually, I've missed a few things because I've been on holiday in Greece for a week. Not that far from cricket, because I've been partly in Corfu, where, Simon, did you know this? Corfu have 12 cricket grounds. It was sort of part of the British Empire at some point, till about the 1860s. A lot of cricket is played in Corfu. I saw a little bit going on, although that wasn't the purpose of my visit at all. But I have missed quite a lot of other stuff going on in the cricket world, haven't I? What's top of your list?
Well, no surprise, you go away and miss all the big stories, yours. But no, it has been a very newsy sort of week, 10 days or so. I mean, all sorts of things have been going on. Of course, Warwickshire winning the county championship, Australia's women losing their unbeaten one-day international record, England's women beating New Zealand's women, the IPL going on, and we'll talk about the Ashwin-Morgan confrontation, ruck, whatever, controversy, if you like, a little bit later. England pulling out their tour of Pakistan, New Zealand pulling out their tour of Pakistan, and the continued uncertainty over the Ashes. Do you know, when I look outside and you see the trees being buffeted and the grey skies, and it is a bit chilly, and I was out in my shorts today, and it actually felt
autumnal. Well, you're always out in your shorts.
Well, I know, but it did feel autumnal out there for the first time. So it is quite appropriate. Yeah, if only we had Corfu weather, really, for most of the summer, so we could play our cricket season. How did cricket ever start in this country? It does make you wonder sometimes, doesn't it? And certainly, you know, for the elongated season we have now, although, you know, September has held up pretty well. It's not been a bad month for weather, and, you know, lots of cricket has been played. And we should say congratulations to Warwickshire for winning the championship, and, you know, on the verge of the double as we speak. They're closing in on victory at Lord's. Now, you've been away in the sunshine, and you're heading off to the sunshine again at the weekend for an interesting cricket event. You should tell us about it.
Well, yeah. So I'm going to ostensibly the IPL, but more pertinently, I'm going to Dubai Expo, which is a big, you know, conference going on in Dubai for about 6 months, I think, and it's been delayed by a year, obviously because of COVID. In that expo exhibition. I'm doing the launch of a new platform, which is called Next Innings Innovation in Cricket. It's on the back of the book I did last year with Manoj Badali called A New Innings, about the innovations in cricket, particularly looking at the IPL and the success of that and the success of T20. And now we're building a platform containing videos, podcasts and written content aimed at helping people working in professional cricket, both players and coaches, and more specifically employees, marketers, marketeers, people in the digital space, all the people trying to help professional cricket be sustainable, really. So working in the business of cricket, that platform will launch next week. And we're starting out with an event at the one of the big hotels in Dubai with Andrew Strauss as the main guest and Manoj Badali and I. And I've actually already recorded some material for this platform, which includes an interview with the famous Billy Beane, who, of course, was the subject of the book I've got in front of me here, Moneyball, Michael Lewis's Moneyball, which also was made into a big movie. How about a character from sport who was played by Brad Pitt in the movie? I mean, that would be every man's dream, to have Brad Pitt play your character in the story of your life. Mm. Anyway, Billy Beane, very interesting character, was the sort of pioneer of data analytics in sport. And he was accompanied in my interview by Nathan Lehman, of course, who is the England cricket analyst and very much a mathematician. So we explored, you know, the use of data, the increasing use of data in cricket. And that interview will come up on this podcast next week after this launch. And, you know,
give us a taster of some of the things they talked about.
I suppose is that maths is becoming much more, or even more, prevalent in cricket and in planning both a team and various strategies within a match, particularly T20. T20 is almost the perfect extension of mathematical permutations. And Billy Beane himself, despite his main role as the general manager of Oakland Athletics in baseball, is becoming increasingly interested in cricket as a sport which relies on data and statistics and is using more and more of those in picking a team and in what both he and Nathan Lehman call democratizing cricket selection. So instead of relying on the experts who've played the game for years and years, you're actually opening selection and choice of players in particular scenarios to people who can crunch numbers effectively. And that is, in a way, the future of the game could be that more and more experts are people who come from the gambling world, who understand probabilities. That's what Nathan Lehman works on when he does his Monte Carlo simulations, predicting what might happen in a match and therefore what team England should pick or what they should do at the toss or which bowler should bowl at which time or whatever. He's using mathematical probabilities to inform decision making. So that's the gist of what we talked about.
I mean, do you think down the road we're going to get to a situation in short form cricket, white ball cricket, T10 or T20 or the 100, where almost every ball that's bowled, it's sort of mathematically assessed. I don't mean after it's happened. I mean before it's happened. You know, a situation where almost the bowler's walking back, looks up or looks to the perimeter, and there's someone indicating sort of tic tac. You know, you've got to bowl this ball now to this player. I mean, I don't know. I don't know where's it going to end up, or is there still room for spontaneity, for feel, for the general quality of a cricketer, the ability of one cricketer to outwit another, or is it going to be so pre-programmed that it actually almost takes some of the joy out of the game? Possibly?
Well, I think that's a fair criticism. I mean, I suppose
criticism; it's more an observation. Really.
Yeah, sure. But it is it's a sort of an oblique criticism, because you're saying it takes the joy out of the game, which I think it probably does. And it's an interesting observation. I suppose we are all humans. We're playing the game as human beings, so humans are not computers. They're not automatons who can produce things at will. There are going to be variations on an attempt to bowl that particular ball or play that particular shot. And also, the more data there is out there, and the better equipped people are to assess that data, the more you, in a way, level up the playing fields. Everybody's got those algorithms and various sort of formulas that will work out what's the best person to be involved in that scenario. Therefore, it will be down to human elements which turn the game in your team's favour rather than the statistics, because everybody's got the statistics already.
Have they not got them already, though? I mean, there's so much data analysis now. What's the next level of data?
Well, I think I'll let Billy Bean explain that next week. But essentially, he says that all the baseball stadia have been equipped with data storage systems and all the kind of different ways of measuring stuff for many, many years. And that's all shared. All that information is shared because it's done stadia-wide and there's a collaboration between all the teams. But in cricket, that's not the case. Stadia are not all equipped with Hawkeye, for instance, and it's only been in existence for, a few, like 15 years. So it doesn't go back as long and there isn't that historical element to it. So cricket is catching up.
Right. So we can really Hawkeye the hell out of the game, basically. We haven't done that yet.
No, not quite. I mean, we're getting there, closer, but still a long way to go, I'd say.
I wonder where Billy Bean stands on laws versus spirit of the game. I mean, I've been watching commentating on the IPL this week, and there was an incident in the game in which I was commentating on involving Delhi Capitals and KKR the other day when basically a throw from Tripathi hit Rishabh Pant, went into space, and Ashwin was batting with Pant, and they took an overthrow. And not all hell was let loose, but there were a lot of words on the field, and Owen Morgan described, said it was a disgrace, and Ravichandran Ashwin has responded to that. I mean Ravichandran Ashwin, he's very much a sort of follower of the laws of the game, and of course you are allowed to take an overthrow if the ball hits your body or bat and deflects into no man's land or no woman's land or whatever you want to call it. You're allowed to do that, but there's this, like, it's like an unwritten sort of rule of the game, isn't it? You don't take an overthrow. But of course, what's in the pot of that is what happened at Lords in the World Cup final, where Ben Stokes dived to make his ground, the ball hit the bat and went to the boundary for four. Now, of course, in a situation like that, the umpire is obliged to signal four. So and I think a lot of Indian supporters I've seen on social media who sort of supporting Ashwin and said, it's all very well for Morgan to say, win the World Cup, with a ball in play from an overthrow hitting the bat. But then when Ashwin does that, he calls him a disgrace. I mean, my take on that would be that they're two very separate issues, because if the ball goes to four, it's just tough. It's one of those things. It's unlucky. Where do you stand on whether a run should be taken when the ball does hit the batter or hit his body and goes into space? What do you think about that?
I mean, I'm old school and I don't like it. And I would say, I'd say don't run, or I wouldn't run. And Stokes, of course, in that incident in the World Cup final, was on his knees and just put his hands up in apology. And I'm sure that he would not have run if the ball hadn't gone to the boundary. Partly because he was already sort of on the ground anyway, but I just think he would have thought, no, it was not fair. My back got in the way, deflected the ball out of the fielder's road, and I got lucky. So my feeling is I wouldn't run. I just think it's not cheating, because it's in the laws, but it does seem against the spirit of the game. What is the spirit of the game?
Who decides that, though?
Well, it's a moral thing, isn't it? It's how you feel about it, really, how it feels inside. Do you feel morally okay about doing that? Do you feel morally okay about running somebody out of the bowler's end, mancadding them when you haven't given them a massive warning or something? I wouldn't feel happy about it. And I suppose it's an individual thing. It's difficult, isn't it? We're trying to think of other sports that have similar kind of etiquette. The best example I can come up with is playing in a golf tournament with another friend, and we were playing in pairs, one ball per pair, so foursomes, and the drive from my colleague went into the rough, and I then had to dig it out of the rough, and I took a few practice swings well away from the ball, but it was in quite long grass, and one of the practice swings, the wind off the club blew the grass slightly and the ball moved. And my colleague, my friend, said that counts as a shot. And I said, what do you mean? I haven't touched the ball. He said, yeah, but the ball moved in the course of you playing a practice swing. That should count as a shot. And I said, but, you know, the people we're playing against, miles over the other side, they've got no idea. And he said, I know, but, you know, that is technically a shot. It's now my go. And I had to give in.
So hold on, Yoz. So on the cricket field, on the golf course.
I'm totally immoral. I'm a hypocrite.
The word hypocrite has been flying around in that controversy involving Owen Morgan. I think sort of directed at Morgan from some by those, you know, who said he was happy to take the four in the World Cup final, but, you know, he called Ravi Chandranarayanan out the other day.
You're right, they are totally different events. Yeah. You're absolutely right.
Yeah. And on Ashwin, he said, he's been tweeting about it. He says, I turned to run the moment I saw the fielder throw and didn't know the ball had hit Rishabh. Will I run if I see it? Of course I will. I'm allowed to. So he's basically saying, I didn't actually know it had hit him, but, you know, if it goes into a space, I will run. It's part of the laws. Am I a disgrace like Morgan said I was? Of course not. Did I fight? No, I stood up for myself. And that's what my teachers and parents taught me to do. And please teach your children to stand up for themselves. In Morgan or Southie's world of cricket, they can choose and stick to what they believe is right or wrong, but do not have the right to take a moral high ground and use the words that are derogatory. And Ravi Chandranarayanan is, you know, standing up for himself. He says, in the laws, and it clearly is, and that's the way he plays the game, and that's what he was happy to do. But I mean, I there are lots of cricketers who say, you know, it's just you do not do it. And I'm sure actually there are a lot of perhaps Indian players playing in the IPL who wouldn't have taken a run in that situation. But Ashwin does. He thinks it's perfectly acceptable. And of course, Ashwin is not averse to running a batter out who's backing up too far at the non-striker's end as he's coming into bowl, you know, the what is known as a man cad, although that, you know, there are those who don't like that term. They feel it sort of unfairly castigates a player who was actually in the right for doing it way back when. Anyway, whatever term you like to use, that's one of the terms that is used. But anyway, my feeling about it is I don't personally see a huge amount wrong with taking a run. If the fielder releases it and puts it back into play and it happens to hit the batter, then, you know, it's just one of those things. But I probably wouldn't do it myself, in the same way that I wouldn't run out someone backing up when I was bowling, certainly not without a warning. If they kept on doing it and they were trying to, you know, take advantage, and that's what part of the problem, isn't it, with the run out backing up is batters do try to take an advantage by moving too far down the pitch at the non-striker's end, and the laws have sort of tightened up to prevent that happening.
You're the definition of someone who sits on the fence, aren't you?
Well, no, not really. I'm just saying I don't really have a problem with it, but what I probably wouldn't want to do is rile your opponent, because that's one of the things it does, isn't it? It gets your opponent really wound up and makes them even more determined. Actually, you probably don't want to do that over something simple as one run, unless of course it's one run to win, then it's fine.
Oh yeah, of course it is. Actually, I mean, Ravi Ashwin, thinking about it, is probably the modern incarnation of WG Grace, because WG Grace was known as a cheat, but actually he wasn't really. I mean, he just knew the rules or the laws very, very meticulously and exploited them to the full. And, you know, when he was bowled and the bail came off, and he was sort of stood there and sort of put the bail back on and said, strong wind today, isn't it? I mean, he sort of half believed that, I think. I mean, there were times when there was a famous occasion when in the Ashes, that famous 1882 test, actually, at the Oval, I think, when one of the Australian batsmen completed a two and then strayed out of his ground to do a little bit of gardening on the damp pitch, and the throw from the boundary was a bit wayward, and ended up with WG Grace at sort of, I don't know, short extra cover or something. And he just threw the ball at the stumps and ran the Australian out, who was doing a bit of gardening. And that decision stood, and it caused an absolute massive rumpus, which is still raging between Australia and England 140 years later.
Well, that's
within his rights in that particular case to do what he did, and so's Ashwin.
Yeah, and there have been other instances as well. I mean, going back into the 70s, with Tony Gregg running out, Alvin Kalicharan right at the end of a Test match day, and there's the Ian Bell incident at Trent Bridge as well, when actually, you know, just before tea, and he was recalled. I mean, there is a, I've said this before, there's a big part of me which is, you know, in those situations, stay in your ground, because in your ground you are safe, and you don't have to play by anyone else's sort of moral compass. You know, you just look after yourself, protect yourself from whatever decision they want to take. But I suppose the Ashwin one is a bit, you know, the overthrow one is a little bit different, really. I mean, what you could say, I suppose, is don't release the ball. Don't, you know, don't put the ball back into play by trying to run the player out. But then you know, if you're looking for a run out, that's totally understandable. It's part of the game. So, you know, it's really up to you to decide as a player, isn't it? And as a watcher, commentator, whatever, you have to decide what your feeling is about that aspect of the game. But I mean, you know, there have been others, you know, it's perfectly okay in cricket for you know, a batter to nick it and stand there, and you know, as if butter wouldn't, you know, melt in his or her mouth. And it used to be perfectly acceptable, and the law's been tightened now to sort of change direction, to sort of get in the way of a throw. You know, when you were running to the danger end, you know, I probably almost very often did that when I was playing club cricket. You know, you're conscious that if you can sort of get in the way of it, way of the throw, then you might be able to save yourself. But that law has been tightened up now, so you know, and I think that's a good thing actually, that you know, it's given something much, you know, back to the fielding side. I've got no qualms with that at all. I mean, that's actually the right way to go as far as the laws are concerned.
Dulwich Cricket Club are the latest club making inroads into supporting women and girls cricket, thanks to a grant from LV Insurance and the ECB's £1 million Fund for Runs community initiative. The Surrey-based club have been running cricket sessions on the Kingswood Estate in Dulwich and working in conjunction with the Estate Tenants Association to give kids an opportunity to play cricket in their local area. Sessions have been run by club coaches and included two female coaches, taking place on the sport cages within the estate, with softball sessions being planned for ages 3 to 6 and 7 to 11, all aimed at giving newcomers a soft entry into the sport. Now, I mentioned the Ashes before, and the question is, what's going to happen? No one's any clearer, are they, really? The only person who does know what's going to happen is Moeen Ali. He knows that he's now playing, I think, in the T10 in Abu Dhabi, and then coming home, and that's it for the time being, because he's retired from Test cricket, which is a shame, actually. I think John Embry said to me he thinks Moeen Ali is easily England's best off spinner, not of all time, but currently, and he is a good bowler, and he's a wonderful cricketer to watch as well. But he's decided it's too much of a stretch to play Test cricket anymore, which is a shame, but. You know, will the Ashes happen? Queensland have just cancelled a game because Tasmania were worried about COVID and getting home. I mean, it's all yeah. a mess, isn't it?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of discussions going on behind the scenes, which we're not privy to. Just on Moeen, yeah, I mean, I just celebrate his Test career. I mean, he played one of the best Test innings I've seen in the last 10 years at Headingley against Sri Lanka on the final day in 2014. A beautiful 100 to nearly save the game. Actually, Jimmy Anderson got out at the other end. And when he was going, he was a fantastic player to watch, and you know, just shy of 200 Test match wickets as well. You know, it's a Test career to celebrate. He probably didn't, of late in the last, you know, recent times, he didn't probably quite achieve what his talent suggested he should achieve. We'll have to enjoy him in white ball cricket. But, you know, it's been a huge pleasure to watch him. That glorious cover drive he plays, but perhaps we haven't seen quite enough of it in recent years. So there's that, the Ashes. I mean, and just go back to that, the incident between Queensland and Tasmania. Basically, the Queensland players, you know, saw the fact there were a few cases in the Brisbane area and said, hold on a second, if the state government in Queensland closes the border, we'll have to quarantine for 14 days. So they wanted to get back to Tasmania. I mean, it does seem weird, isn't it? A few COVID cases and it causes the game not to happen. Although an hour away, of course, Australia's women are going ahead against India's women in that Test match that's ongoing, a bit rain affected on the first day, and they had an excellent really good one day series actually, with India losing 2-1 but should have won the second game. So yeah, one of the problems in Australia, it seems from a distance, is that we think of it as one country, but actually you've got all the separate states and they've got different rules, regulations, you know, governing what's going on in their states, and so it's very easy to close borders down. It looks as if, even if the Ashes do go ahead, that there will be no Test match in Perth. I mean, that looks sort of no go. And who will go from England? I mean, Joe Root saying the other day that, you know, he still hasn't heard all the, you know, the guarantees, the arrangements that he would like to say, yeah, it's fine to go and take my family. And of course, the other issue while you were away, Jos, it was very newsy while you were away in Greece, sunning yourself. And we are us feeling all envious. Is the cancellation that the tour to Pakistan, which, you know, it didn't sit well with me, that it was four days. Okay, it's talking about the men's tour, because the women were going for a longer tour. The men's tour, to me, it was, you know, really symbolic. It was a real support for Pakistan cricket. And you think of how Pakistan cricket supported England last summer. They came and effectively they paid some of the England's players' wages by fulfilling the television contracts. It meant, you know, the players could get paid whatever. And, you know, for 4 days, surely they're, you know, the England players could have made the sacrifice to go to Pakistan. It was so important to Pakistan cricket, and they didn't. And, you know, the ECB, to me, have been a bit mealy-mouthed about it. You know, it was about COVID and all those sort of situations, and, you know, it's been difficult for the players and mental health and well-being and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, and I can understand that, because it's not been easy. But you were talking about 4 days. New Zealand, at least New Zealand got there. At least New Zealand were ready to play. And then whatever that security threat was, we don't know. We probably will never know. And then they came home. And then England sort of, I don't know, they seemed to just use that as an excuse, whatever. And I don't think it sat very well. And Pakistan, you know, really, really upset about it. And, you know, what's going to happen in a year's time in England? They're supposed to be back there for a test series.
I mean, it's feeble. It is feeble. And it's a shame. And you can sort of hear the arguments. I think, actually, I would have been interested to know if some of the England players, watching an interview that I saw on BBC World, actually, had the BBC World Service TV on in my hotel room in Paxos, just in a bit of downtime, and must have replayed the interview with Imran Khan and John Simpson about 10 times. So I was able to sort of absorb it fairly carefully. And, you know, Imran speaks very passionately about the future of Pakistan and the hardships that they've suffered. For instance, you know, 80,000 Pakistanis dying as a result of terrorist groups from outside the organization, and the fact that the Pakistan government sided with the US in the war against terrorism, and that cost Pakistan at least 80,000 lives. And, you know, they're trying to obviously clean their country up, and they're doing their best. And, you know, cricket's come back to the country now. And it seemed right that England were doing their bit in return for Pakistan coming here last year. And they've reneged on that. And it is a shame.
Yeah. Well, it's left a lot of people hurt, I think, and a lot of people dismayed as well at England's decision. I reiterate, at least New Zealand went. We don't know what that security issue was, and England not going.
It does illustrate player power again, doesn't it? Which the Indians exercised very clearly at Headingley, Old Trafford, before that final test. It's happened again. So,
It seems to illustrate player power. Although, you know, Ian Watmore, I mean, they initially just issued a statement, you know, and then said nothing for, a week or so. Ian Watmore has been speaking the last couple of days. And so, you know, it was the ECB that took the decision. Now, they didn't sort of consult with all the player bodies. So,
the ECB know they need the players. I mean, there's always this in any sport, there's always this, if you like, kind of conflict between administrators and players, where the administrators say, well, you know, without us, you wouldn't have any cricket. And the players saying, well, without us, you wouldn't have a game. So, you know, both thinking the other one is less important. And in the end, the players are the power, really, because without them, you don't have a game.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the world of cricket feels, you know, pretty uncertain at the moment. Although, you know, the IPL is going on after a fashion. It does miss the crowds. I mean, following it in the last, you know, week or so since it's resumed, it does miss the crowds. You know, it's what makes it, I think. And it does feel a little bit like fixture fulfillment in the UAE. And you can understand it. There's so much money at stake. And I know people are quite cynical about that, but I mean, it's a massive part of the world cricket economy. And then the T20 World Cup, which is also going to be staged in the UAE. We're sort of building up towards that. All starts on the 17th of October, the match between Papua New Guinea and Oman. There's a qualifying tournament first before they get into the main competition. Scotland and Ireland are a part of that qualifying tournament, and England are sort of, you know, building towards that now. It's only a few weeks away. And all eyes will be on the UAE for that tournament.
And of course, how the pitches stand up to it after a fairly intense period of playing on them for the IPL, how will the pitches be when the World T20 starts? Yeah. And the scores have been relatively low, actually, in the IPL, haven't they?
Yeah, it's been quite hard work for the batters. I mean, they've only played a handful of games in Sharjah. I mean, last time, Sharjah was party time for the batters, but I mean, some low scores in that venue, and some really hard work for the batters in Abu Dhabi and Dubai as well. And of course, they're playing some of the games out of the out of those sort of venues to start with to help the pitches recover. But I don't know. I'm just wondering about England's chances. If, you know, if the pitches are very grabby, I mean, they generally like quite flat pitches, don't they? Sort of traditional T20 pitches. Do they have the slow bowlers and the bowlers in general to exploit those conditions? Yeah. Notable that, you know, Adil Rashid, for example, played one game in the IPL. He went for 35, I think, three overs, and then, you know,
he hasn't played since.
Yeah, so. I mean, that's. I mean, England show a lot more faith in Adil Rashid than obviously than his IPL franchise is doing.
I think they've got the right man on the spot anyway. Nathan Lehman, who's working with the KKR, Kolkata Knight Riders, and alongside Owen Morgan, so he'll have a very good sense of the best bowlers for those pitches. We'll preview the World T20 in a couple of weeks. Actually, now is perhaps not the time. No. What I would like to just finish up by talking about briefly is a big event in cricket that's happening at Lord's. And I'm not talking about the Bob Willis Trophy final. I'm talking about the new president of the MCC, who will be sworn in on October the 1st, the first ever female president of the MCC, who, of course, is Claire Connor, the managing director of the England Women's Cricket, and obviously a former player as well. And, you know, actually, I think it's a brilliant move. I mean, the club is, what, 235 years old. So founded in 1787, never had a female president, and never even had a female member until 1998. So it is quite a revolutionary transformation, having had 2 years of Kumar Sangakkara as president before that, who was the first Asian president. So the club is really, the MCC is really trying to move ahead. And actually, I was on the committee until recently. We had a departing dinner as departing members of the committee, because you do 3 years and then you have to have a stint off the committee. And at the parting dinner, we discussed what the MCC is actually for. And, you know, the verdict came out that, you know, A, to produce world-class cricket at a top-class venue, and also to further the game, to grow the game. And in that regard, a couple of little facts for you. The MCC this year played 468 out matches against clubs and schools, some in inner cities. That's 80 less than normal, but, you know, it's still a tremendous number. And also they run something called the MCC Foundation, which has over 60 hubs offering free coaching to state school kids, age 11 to 15, that sort of age group. And just trying to get more engagement in the game at that age group. And that is, interestingly, and not surprisingly, an area that Claire would particularly like to focus on. So I asked her, I spoke to her the other day, actually, and I just asked her, you know, what were her ambitions as the MCC president?
I think that the lovely thing about the role is, or what I've experienced so far, is that I've been very included, maybe in part due to Kumar being overseas this year a lot and with COVID and everything. But I've been very included in some of the strategic conversations taking place, a lot of conversations about their EDI, you know, their equity, diversity and inclusion agenda, which they are very serious about as a club. And also I've started working with the MCC Foundation as a trustee, which is the charitable arm of the club. And I am blown away by the kind of potential, I think. And I think one thing, if I was to say one thing that I'd really like to look back on and have tried to support or influence is to try to bring the club and the MCC Foundation a little closer together. I think for many reasons over recent years, they haven't been very hand in glove. And actually, I think the work of the foundation, its community work, its work with girls, its work with refugees overseas, it's led by an amazing woman called Dr. Sarah Fain, who used to be actually CEO of Afghan Connection for 20 years. She's an amazing woman. She's got an amazing vision. And I think actually the foundation can do a lot for the MCC. So hopefully that's one area that I can play a bit of a part in. Really looking forward to seeing Jamie Cox in his new role. He starts in this week, actually, I think, as the new Assistant Secretary for Cricket. And I think he's got some quite inclusive ideas under in his notepad. So, yeah, just really looking forward to it.
So the MCC Foundation is just a donation-only organisation run by this woman, Sarah Fain, who Claire referred to there. You can make donations very easily by going to the lords.org website. And it is a fantastic organisation which is trying to grow the game at state school kind of level, trying to get more kids involved in playing and also actually helping the game grow beyond these shores too. But it is a very worthy body and one that's really worth supporting.
And one other thing the MCC is responsible for, of course, the laws of the game. And one thing that happened, another thing that happened really well that was newsworthy, is that in the laws of the game, batsman has been changed to batter, which didn't go down well with everybody. But it is about inclusivity. Men and women, girls and boys play the game. And we've had a discussion about that earlier this season on this podcast, where I made the decision that, you know, I've always used batsman in my commentary, and I'm now moved to batter. And I'm also talking about deep third and short third. And that came as a result of a conversation.
But you did say, well, you did say no man's land earlier, didn't you?
Well,
and then you corrected it to no woman's land.
Well, the point is these things are part of our language. As we grow up, they're part of our lexicon. It takes a while to it takes a while to change. And actually, I don't get that worked up about it. If I do occasionally say batsman now, whatever, or third man, whatever, it doesn't bother me, because I'm sort of in the process of change. And there we go. That's my plan in the future. Not everyone agrees with it, but okay, I get the chance to commentate as I want to.
Well, listen, Billy Beane quite likes it anyway, because batter in cricket is now the same as batter in baseball. So he hasn't got to change his language. And we'll be hearing, as I said, from him next week. I've got to go, because I've got to do my PCR test before my next overseas trip. So I'll speak to you next time from Dubai. How's that?
Brilliant. Enjoy the sunshine. Bye for now, Yoz. Bye, everyone else.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.